You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 65, Trent's Glass Ceiling. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the ThinkGeek Batleth letter opener and inflatable captain's chair, a new album that puts a jazz spin on Trek, the future of holodeck-style gaming, and we debate which captain would make the best parent. Then in the feature, we're joined by Brian Finifter and Charlene Schmidt to discuss the first season TNG episode, Angel One. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm afraid that I've come down with some sort of virus from the holodeck, but Dr. Crusher has found an inoculant, and I believe I'm recovering.
Well, I'm good to hear that. Those snowball fights on the holodeck, not good for the crew. Now, would you like to give the order to really start the show? Would you like to tell me to engage?
I would. One moment, please. And get... number one, you go ahead.
Engage. Oh, man.
But seriously, though, I am getting over a sickness. I don't know if anyone heard my dulcet tones last week. That wasn't because I am a new dulcet man. It's because I basically was sick last week, and it's taken all week to recover from it.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah, after, what was it, the day after we recorded, I think, I found out that you were actually sick. And I didn't actually notice on the show. I thought you sounded perfectly fine.
Well, no, I was coming down with something. I don't know. I don't think it's from the holodeck, though, because I always do a decon rub with T'Pol before going in and out of the holodeck each time.
Well, who doesn't?
I know. You're missing out if you don't.
All right. So, what's been happening for you this weekend, Greg?
No. It's been just a normal week, aside from being sick. Did more stuff with the zombie web series with Sci-Fi Commons. That was awful, a lot of fun. Got together and played some more Star Trek Catan, and I think people saw that. This time, I did emerge victorious. And my understanding, I did want to mention, the Catan game is now available at Target for $50. So if you want to as well join in the Star Trek Catan fun, it's exclusively at Walmart or at Target. So don't go looking at your local game store. They're not going to have it.
Now, you also recommend that people play this in an establishment such as a McDonald's, correct?
I do. I mean, the McDonald's has the proper atmosphere and the proper, you know, music going on, and the people around you, it's perfect. Yeah, it just doesn't get better than McDonald's, honestly.
Well, we should also mention that you and I spent a little bit of our time yesterday appearing on the Trekmate Pod Till You Dropathon and talking about Gene's vision and the different series. And I guess we pretty much ended up talking about Deep Space Nine and Enterprise.
Yeah, I tried to bring up the other series, but it really, when you're talking about it, you really can contrast TOS as being something in complete control of Gene, and then DS9 as being sort of created after he had passed. So it shows, you know, what people start doing when they get a hold of Star Trek. Yeah, it was a really interesting conversation. I look forward to going back and listening to it. I had to duck out early, unfortunately, but I understand that you guys had a good conversation after I left as well.
Yeah, we did. And I'm hoping, my understanding is that they are going to at least try to make the entire Pod Till You Dropathon available as a podcast. Hopefully it'll work out. I mean, as we know from doing shows, recording 24 hours worth of audio is not as easy as some people may think, given computer equipment and things that can go wrong. So hopefully it'll work for them. I was able to pop in and out, listen here and there. Obviously, I couldn't do the entire 24 hours with all the stuff that was going on in family activities and yeah. and all. Although I do understand that our own Tom Baddeley from Deck 8 did stay up for the entire 24 hours as a listener. So I think we need
quite
to
impressive.
Give Tom some kind of badge or a promotion or something. So
yeah, he can be a lieutenant junior grade now. Basically a lieutenant, but you get like an extra little circle pip. It matters. It matters right. somewhere.
Did you notice in Deep Space Nine, what was I watching the other day? Captive Pursuit, I believe it is, where they actually show O'Brien as a chief, not an ensign, but he has a single black pip.
Oh, really?
Yes. You know, later he gets the special little emblem for non-enlisted personnel, I guess, or whatever you call them. Yeah.
Yeah, I like his little, but he just has a little single one. That's wow, that's awful.
And it's black. Yeah, it's like it's like an ensign junior grade, I guess.
Right, exactly. Not even, but he gives people orders. That's the weird thing. Like, he can give a lieutenant an order, and it seems like they have to follow it.
Well, it's his position, right? He's chief of operations. So
there you go.
It's right there in the title. He's chief of operations. Right.
Yeah, I like that they found a way to keep him being a chief because he was transporter chief and everyone loved calling him chief.
Right.
So they just found, what can we do? What can we call him? Chief of security? No, that'd be horrible. Chief information officer? No, that doesn't make any sense. Chief of operations. There you go.
He could be chief dart player. He could be chief historical battle reenactor.
Yeah. Chief Dabo girl.
Yes. I'd love to see Miles in the Dabo outfit, although probably not as much as Jules would.
I know. Jules, I just watched the episode. I stopped being Jules when I was 6 years old and you injected me with, now I became Julian. Yes. Whatever. It's still fun to call you Jules, man.
That's right. All right. Well, why don't we move into some of our stories, Greg? We're going to start off with a little bit of a sad story. We like to remember any time that a member of the Star Trek family passes away, whether they are main cast members or supporting characters. And unfortunately, we lost another guest from TNG over the past week as Lance Legault, who played the Klingon Ketemak in The Emissary, passed away on September 10th. So by the time this drops, it's, you know, already been a good week or so.
Yeah, he was a memorable one. I remember, of course, not to be confused with Emissary, but The Emissary was a pretty good TNG episode that early on brought the Klingons into the mix.
Right, yeah. That was good character building for Worf as well.
Yeah.
So it was a good episode. And yeah, they, if you remember, they were the Klingons who were in stasis for 75 years.
Right.
And come out, and they, of course, believe that the Klingons and the Federation are still at war. And it's
which is a pretty good thing to just assume. I mean,
right.
They become at war and off and not at war and back at war and then off of war really constantly all
right.
through the thing.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, if Riker was after your woman and then you were in stasis for 75 years, when you get thawed out, it's pretty safe to just assume that Riker's still after your woman, right?
Yes, very true. Exactly.
So, yeah, he had a very interesting career. I mean, he was the stunt double for Elvis Presley.
There you go, yeah.
He was Colonel Roderick Decker on the A-Team and also appeared in a lot of other shows that our listeners know well, like Logan's Run, Battlestar Galactica, the original.
Right.
T.J. Hooker, right there with William Shatner. A Quantum Leap with Captain Archer, and many more shows. So it's a sad, again, to lose yet another member of the Star Trek family, but yeah. We will certainly remember Lance Legault.
Yeah. Was he one of the ones who was making the convention circuit, or did he just continue being an actor?
Yeah, I don't really know for sure, although I know he was active up until 2004 or so.
Yeah, it looks like he just kept working and working and working for as long as possible, which I really admire. I love it when I see an actor who really sticks with it and says, you know, I can be a young actor, I can be a middle-aged actor, I can be an old actor. I'm just going to keep finding roles to do.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's sad to see him go, but obviously he had a long and fruitful life. I'm probably going to need to go back and watch The Emissary this week to remember him. I tried to do that, like when I forget his name, but the man who played Commodore Decker passed. I went back and watched Doomsday Machine. It's great to see it again with fresh eyes, really focus on the actor.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll do that as well. All right, well, speaking of Klingons, Greg, as we move into something a little more lighthearted, mm-hmm. ThinkGeek has once again pulled out all the stops to create a must-have item for Star Trek fans. And if you're like me, when I receive snail mail and I need to open the envelope, I have to go and dig around for my letter opener because I just have a little cheap plastic one and I lose it all the time because, you know, I get snail mail like, you know, once every 3 weeks. So,
right.
I think I am going to order this item and just put it right here on my desk. And this is the ThinkGeek Batleth letter opener.
It looks fantastic. It's 8 inches long. Yeah, I just imagine Jadzia, you know, walking to the holodeck. I need a Batleth 8 inches long, made of stainless steel, with 4 points, good for opening letters.
With a resin cast display stand so I can rest between battles.
Yes. And it'll sit right there on your desk. This is inspired. I'm definitely ordering one of these. I mean, it's only $25. Yeah, I only get a letter maybe once every 3 months, but I will look forward to getting a letter.
Definitely. So I'm going to order this, but I may have to bundle up here. I need to order a bunch of stuff at once because for me, the problem with ThinkGeek is that the shipping ends up being about $38 to Japan. So
right.
It's like I wanted to get a Star Trek iPhone case because that's something you absolutely cannot get in Japan. Like, oh, iPhone case, $15. Well, I mean, that's nothing. No problem at all. Put it in the cart. The total's like $52. Okay, well.
Oh, my God.
Maybe not. So maybe I'll get an iPhone case, a Batleth letter opener, and maybe I'll even get this next item right here.
Yeah, they finally have the inflatable captain's chair that fits adults. So they've had the one for kids. And I think they even showed pictures of or it was a video, right? Their promo video showed a man carrying it around.
Well, they always had an adult sitting in it, but it was actually designed for kids.
Right. The fine print said, you know, don't sit it if you weigh more than 75 pounds.
I know.
So this one's actual full size, supports up to 250 pounds. And it's Kirk's captain's chair. Now, I was wondering when they said adult captain's chair, if it's designed for other activities that can be conducted in chairs.
I don't know. Char's coming on again for the feature, so we can cover that during the feature today if we want to.
Right. I guess you need to weigh yourself and your parmak together. Is that the word? And see if together you're only 250 pounds, you're probably square.
You're probably okay. So this came out, and actually I saw Drew tweet, oh, can we please get these and make them official Trek FM ready room sitting requirement or something. And I thought, wait, no, this came out a long time ago. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember talking about this. I remember the commercial. And then I looked and saw, no, this is actually the one for the dad in the commercial.
Right.
Not just for the kid. So.
Well, and this is awesome to have an inflatable captain's chair I can sit in. I really hope they do inflatable, the whole bridge, have an inflatable tactical station, inflatable ops, inflatable, helms. You can even have an inflatable trill ensign.
Thought you already had one of those, Greg.
Oh, man. But yeah, you can have your whole inflatable bridge. I think it'd be awesome.
Inflatable bridge would be really, really awesome. Also, inflatable engineering with inflatable Jeffries tubes would be fantastic.
We've got to eject the inflatable core!
And then it floats off into space, drifting slowly.
And Geordi does a barrel roll under the inflatable bulkhead.
Do a barrel roll! The barrel roll! Press me or I'll
And then he realizes Worf runs down with his Batleth letter opener and just slices the door right. So you can get back in.
Speaking of the letter opener, I was really looking forward. Now, if we both order one of these little Batleth letter openers. At Star Trek Las Vegas next year, we can have like a really teeny tiny Batleth duel.
Oh, that will be awesome. Definitely. We can do it while we're standing in line waiting for our soy chai lattes.
Exactly. All right, now what else has ThinkGeek graced us with this week?
They have one other item. They have the Star Trek cookie cutter set, which includes 5 pieces. It includes the Federation symbol, the Klingon Empire symbol, the Enterprise, the phaser, and the Live Long and Prosper Vulcan hand gesture.
Nice.
Now, what I'm wondering here is they have the Federation symbol, they have the Klingon symbol, they're obviously setting up all the empires. Right. Why is there no Vulcan symbol in here?
You do need that separate Vulcan symbol, yes, to distinguish it from the rest of the Federation.
That's right. So these are great. You know, I do know we have some listeners who do really enjoy baking cookies and even Star Trek cookies. So if you like to do that, great. Great way to get your children into Star Trek baking together.
Exactly what I was thinking. I mean, that's what really got, when I was a kid, you know, we didn't have Star Trek cookie cutters, but we had so many other things. And that's why I was really, really into, you know, Christmas trees and little stars and like dogs. Just because I had those cookie cutters available. So if you're a Trekkie instead, instead of bothering with those silly things, have Star Trek ones. Make sure your kids are into something really important.
That's right. And then you can mix up a batch of cellular peptide icing to put on there.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
Purely Star Trek. So yeah, these are all available at ThinkGeek. I don't know if we mentioned the price of the chair. Maybe we did. The adult chair is $34.99, and the kids chair is still available for $24.99, and the cookie cutter set is $19.99.
Get them all and bundle up and save.
That's right. You can bake the cookies, and you can eat them while you sit in the chair and open your mail with your teeny tiny Batleth.
Just be careful you don't puncture the chair with your Batleth.
That's a good point. They do warn you that this is not a toy. It is very sharp.
Nice.
It's probably sharper than the actual Batleths they use on Star Trek, right?
That's very true.
Because as you've pointed out, whenever someone is hit by a Batleth, it's just that thud sound, right?
Right, it's just a thump, right? Like Indiana Jones punching somebody.
Oh, man. All right, well, what else do we have up in news today, Greg?
Well, we also wanted to talk a little bit about the holodecks of the future. Obviously, I have a holodeck here in my apartment, as I assume all of our listeners do, but instead of being completely imaginary, Microsoft is actually talking about building a 3D, 360-degree panorama that you can play games inside of.
Right. Yeah, this sounds awesome if it were to actually happen. I like the diagram of this person who has an exceedingly large living room.
Yeah.
or maybe I'm just too Japanese and I'm used to small spaces. I don't know. But it looks like a very large room that might be required here to me.
Right. Well, they've got the Kinect device that sort of senses where you are in the living room. But then you're still looking at this little TV. So it's trying to create this whole universe around you and have you inhabit it. But you're still, the only way you're interacting really is with your little box. Whereas this would hope to, I guess, project all around you, I guess, onto your walls, the same thing. So it's basically Kinect, but it immerses you inside the world.
So you're going to need to install a lot of holo emitters all around your living room to use this.
I guess. I mean, I would assume maybe it's going to start by being, you know, goggles that you have to put on.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the holo emitters, that's a key, because you want to really be able to feel the things. So you need the force fields and the holo emitters, but that's decades, if not centuries away. Makes a little bit more sense to maybe give people gloves that have sensors in them and give them goggles they can look at, and then they can look around. But if you're in your living room, do you really want to put on 3D goggles that cover up your vision and just be flailing about?
See, that's the thing. Now, I thought you were going to say put on gloves with spikes on them and then
right.
And then fight while MC Hammer dances off on the side. We've been watching a little too much TNG season 1, I think.
I do hope they release that Code of Honor game It is better with Kinect.
Oh, it is. But yeah, you're right. Well, Microsoft says that the user may enjoy an immersive 3D experience using suitable headgear, right, such as active shutter glasses configured to operate in synchronization with suitable alternate frame image sequencing at primary display and environmental display. I tell you, these
was
guys...
Was that written by the Voyager technical consultants? I think Microsoft just wrote... looks at 3D environment by teching the tech. Exactly. And then they just passed it off to somebody.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Those guys up in Redmond, man, they really know how to tech the tech.
Yeah,
I do think that this was written by the Voyager writing staff.
Absolutely.
But this is just a patent at this point.
Yeah.
Which means that probably, you know, at some point in the future, we're going to get to enjoy the big court battle.
Exactly.
Where Microsoft gets sued by Google, probably, or Samsung. Right. Probably Samsung. I think Samsung has already invented this system, and they're going to have to sue Microsoft over it.
But. Yeah. Well, they'll show TNG as prior art, and it's going to be a mess eventually. So we can look forward to that.
We definitely can. So this would be interesting anyway if this ever actually came about. Now, Greg, if you could have a 3D holographic gaming system, what kind of games would you most want to play with this system?
Oh, you mean aside from the Code of Honor adaptation?
Aside from that one. I mean, that's an obvious one that like everyone wants to play. So
right. Well, I mean, to be honest, actually, what I'd love to see is more sports ball games where you're actually playing as a... To be serious, though... As much as I joke that I know nothing about sports ball, I do actually have a baseball game that I like to play. But the problem is, it's hard to feel like you're part of the game. Whereas if I could put on these glasses and really step up to the plate and really see the ball coming at me. Now, I don't know if there's any way I could swing the bat fast enough to hit it. They'd have to put it on easy mode for me. But same thing, think of if you're playing a feet ball game, with the Wolverines, the Wolfmen.
The Wolfmen, yeah.
You can actually be there in the huddle. You can be there in the scrimmage amongst all these burly men and really play like you're playing football and not just looking at these little tiny 3D men on the screen.
Right, but that's why you need the very, very large room, because if you're going to be the Wolfmen, you know, you're going to need to have... You need to be very far away from the TV when you try to kick the ball through the score poles, right?
Absolutely. I'd really love to make a football game written by me with rules by me.
That would be fun. I'd like to have that game. All right. So we could look forward to that. You know, I was thinking, like, what if you could play... I'm a big Zelda fan. I've played every Zelda since the very first one came out. And I think it would be really cool to... Because I've actually played... They redid the Ocarina of Time for the 3DS.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Which is... It's actually quite good. The 3DS is... You know, of course, it's not HD quality, but it works quite well for the games made by Nintendo. But it would be interesting. I mean, you walk around the dungeons. But I almost wonder if it would be a little bit frightening if it were actually like a holodeck adventure.
It might be. Yeah. Well, I mean... But think of that. Think of the sort of horror you could have, the sort of scary games. I just watched a really scary episode of Doctor Who today. And if I could enter this episode, it was Blink, for those of you following along at home. If I could enter it and I've got to, you know, look around and make sure I don't let the weeping angels out of my sight, that would be like a whole other level of engagement with a video game that I don't think you could get just playing it with a controller on screen.
No. They would have to have all new warning labels, though, on these games.
Absolutely.
Do not play if you have, if you have heart conditions or you're easily frightened or...
Yeah.
It could really impact you.
Absolutely.
What I also want to know is, of course, now, if this comes out and it's done by Microsoft... I think it will be very, very realistic to Star Trek fans, because most likely there will be malfunctions happening all the time where, you know how the holodeck just breaks all the time? Well,
yeah.
I would expect that a Microsoft product will probably have a similar situation, and then you can't get out of your living room. You're just stuck in there.
We joke about the blue screen of death, but imagine once the Microsoft holodeck safeties are off, it's really a blue screen of death, where this blue screen is coming at you and it's going to literally crush you. Yeah, I would be quite worried about venturing into this.
Of course, in the Star Trek future, it's known as the blue grid of death.
Yes, of course.
All right. Well, we'll see how this story develops. I'm sure this is... Well, I say I'm sure this is quite a long way off in the future, but at the pace that technology is advancing, you never know. It could only be like, yeah, you know, 20 years or something. So
yeah,
you never know. All right, Greg, moving on. StarTrek.com was running a very interesting poll this past week on Facebook called Papa Picard, Mother Janeway. And they asked, which Star Trek captain would you most want as one of your parents?
Mm.
So yeah, what were the results here?
Well, the results put Picard at the top. They gave Picard 32% of the vote. Kirk came down with 22%, Janeway with 19%, Sisko with 17%, and then Archer all the way at the bottom at 10%. Honestly, though, this reads more like a popularity poll than actually answering the question of who you'd want to be your parent.
It's basically the most popular series at the moment is the captain of that series. That's the order in which the results came out.
Yeah, because, I mean, who really in their right mind wants Picard as their parent? I mean, sure he softens on kids over the course of the series, but he wouldn't make a good parent in any incarnation we saw him at. He barely makes a good boyfriend.
Right, that's right. Especially when he's sick.
Right.
And he's stuck in bed.
Oh, man.
We were watching Angel One yesterday.
Yeah.
And there was the scene with Picard and Beverly. Mm-hmm. And my wife just says, oh, is Picard grouchy? Is he grumpy? Aw.
He's already grouchy. He's already grumpy. And now let's make him sick and have Crusher feed him some ungodly mixture of Leola root and God knows what else. That's really going to help things.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, who would you choose here to be one of your parents and why?
Yeah, I honestly would say Kirk. Now, I know that he didn't have the best relationship with David, but I think he would have been a good parent if he'd been around. And honestly, if I could have gone off on the original Enterprise and joined in with that, I think that would have been a great time. The other ones, Janeway, perhaps she might be a little on the strict side, a little changing her mind on what the rules were every week. My other answer I'd probably give would be Sisko. As much as he was not that great a father, at least he's a role model I could really look up to. And I guess that's true of Picard as well, but I feel like Sisko feels more like a real person, somebody I could look to for guidance and advice on living better, as everyone sort of did. A lot of people at least came to him for advice in that way.
They did. I would say that they're both role models. I think that Sisko was a very loving father, though. You could tell that he was very, when it came to Jake, especially early on when Jake was younger, that he was very a hands-on. You say he wasn't there much. We didn't see him on the screen a lot, but I get the feeling that behind the scenes, Sisko was actually a pretty hands-on father.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and a very loving father. Whereas Picard's very standoffish. And now Janeway, she would let you drink coffee even when you're young. So
that's
there's
true.
Something. Kirk, I think, would be pretty laid back. You know, you could learn the ropes with the ladies from Kirk as well.
Yeah.
As your dad. And I don't know, you know, Archer changed a lot from the beginning to the end of the show.
Which Archer? Which season?
That's right.
Is it President Archer? Maybe he would have been a good parent.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, the answer I wanted to give here was actually George Kirk, Captain Kirk's father, who we see, he basically dies at the beginning of the new Star Trek film. That guy's a hell of a man. And if that guy was my father, even if he died when I was a baby, that still would lead me, I mean, inevitably to greatness, because I just have that to look up to and that to work towards. As Pike says, you know, if you can be even a tenth of the captain your father was. So that's the answer I would give. Of course, he wasn't a choice on the poll. So.
Right. Yeah, there was an alternate result to this, speaking of captains who were not lead captains of the series. Now, I understand that in one poll, Captain Spock, received 98% of the vote. But the question was, which Star Trek captain is your daddy? And
oh, man.
As you know from our Twitter friends, that question's pretty much going to get go to Spock.
He has quite the following. Even to this day, Leonard has quite the following.
Indeed, he does. Now, we could also consider Captain Riker of the USS Titan.
Mm-hmm. It's your daddy. Well, and of course, you go with Captain Harriman, but in that case, your daddy's not coming until next Tuesday, so...
Oh, man. Where's Daddy, Mommy? He'll be here next Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, there's also Captain Argyle.
Captain Argyle, yes. You know, Daddy's come home with the gin again. Yeah.
Captain of the Jeffries
Tubes. He spends most of his time, you know, in the basement, in the Jeffries Tubes in the basement, watching football on the television. We'll leave Daddy Argyle alone.
All right. All right. So that's the poll. Those are the results. So let us know what you think if you'd like. All right, Greg. Well, we had another story that came out this week, and this is from Sarah Van Cleve, who, as you remember, was our roving reporter at Star Trek Las Vegas this year. And Sarah writes about Star Trek and such for the paper there in Colorado. And she's writing about a new fully licensed Star Trek jazz album called Smooth Federation, which I believe is pronounced Smooth Federation.
Nice.
So this is someone who is taking music from Star Trek and kind of reimagining that in a jazz style.
Right. It's sort of, I'm still trying to get my head around exactly what's going on here. Now, is he taking real songs and making like parodies? Are these original songs a la Five-Year Mission?
No, he's a jazz musician himself. His name is Andrew Allen, and he lives in Orlando, Florida. And he is taking the melodies from Star Trek and reimagining them, putting a jazz twist on them. So
okay.
They're not parodies. I mean, he's not trying to make fun of the music or, you know, create a parody of the music. He's just giving it a jazz. You know how Dork Trek uses that piano rendition of the TNG theme, for example.
Right.
My ringtone on my iPhone is a piano version of Ilea's theme from the motion picture, for example.
So it's there you go. Like, okay, so instead of like that bum 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 ba bum, it's sort of like a tunch tunch bum 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 ba bum bum bum, sort of like that.
It's kind of like that. It's kind of like when the fight starts and they're like da 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 da, like that, and then the Gorn falls over. So
yes, perfect. Okay, no, I can get behind this. Sure.
So this is available now through iTunes and Amazon and a site called CD Baby.
CD Baby is a good way of getting on iTunes for independent musicians. You can sort of just give them your files and they'll handle all of the back end, which is really nice.
Oh, okay. That's excellent. So that's coming out. But in fact, this album, they say, has already been purchased by number one himself, Jonathan Frakes.
Exactly. Old trombone, as
that's
we like
what
to
they call
him.
The old boner. That's what he's known as.
Yes.
On the Enterprise.
Right.
So he has purchased this album, as you should not be surprised, you know.
He's a trombonist. Yeah, I imagine if he if you see it, you know, if Jonathan's walking around a convention and sees that, yeah, he's definitely going to pick that up. I want to pick it up myself. Hear what's going on here. Is it a mixture of all the different series? Is it focusing? I feel like it would mostly be focusing on next gen, because you've got Riker there playing jazz. But you really could do it with all, music from all the different series.
Well, actually, Greg, it is a mix. There's a lot of different stuff on here. I'll tell you what the tracks are on. So tell me what you're most looking forward to hearing.
Okay.
There is the theme from TOS, you know, the original Alexander Courage. There's the TNG, Deep Space Nine, the Voyager themes. There's also music from The Search for Spock, from Insurrection. And there is, you think I'm joking, the ancient battle music from Amok Time.
Oh, perfect.
There is Where My Heart Will Take Me, which I think is actually Faith of the Heart from Enterprise. And there's The Voyage Home, which I know you're going to love, because, you know, the sax probe is going to come in. And it's just
that'd be perfect. I was hoping you were going to say you had the whales on sax. And they sort of stick it in the blowhole and go at it. I think they could do some pretty good tunes there.
It is. You know, I mean, you've got the alto sax, you've got the tenor sax, you've got the bari sax, but you know, whale sax is what everyone really wants to see and hear.
Absolutely.
So really looking forward to that probe coming in. And then there's also the inner light. And hopefully if you throw this on your entertainment system in your living room, you can actually hear this in 7.1 surround sound.
I do hope so. Now, Chris, I wanted to ask you, okay, so we've got jazz, and I know you're a big jazz musician, but what sort of other musical styles would you like to see brought into Star Trek music?
Interesting. Let's see. I started to say we could always go with some, you know, heavy metal, something old, but I think that's kind of been done. At least it's been done for original music. You know, we've got bands like Warp 11 out there. I don't know. You know, I think maybe pan flutes would be nice. I see these guys in the station that I go to several times a week who stand outside the station and actually perform on pan flute.
Wow.
So, you know.
And do you ever hear them playing the fight music from Amok Time? I think that could be pretty good.
I haven't, but I think I'm going to request it.
Okay, there definitely. You go.
I don't know, steel drums. You know, I always picture that on Ryza, there are steel drums playing all the time, even though we haven't actually gotten to see that, but it's just my feeling.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely going to go with heavy metal. You know, there's that Jimi Hendrix version of the Star Spangled Banner. I'd love to see, of course, it's not possible now, but I would have loved to see Jimi Hendrix really wail into that Alexander Courage theme. I mean, instead of having, you know, the woman singing, just have Hendrix doing a mad solo. And, you know, even if Hendrix isn't around today, somebody's got to dig in and do that.
That actually would be pretty cool. I think
a
lot of people would buy that album. I don't know if people will buy the pan flute one, but I think they'll buy that one.
Yeah,
for sure. I'd like to see that. I'd like to hear that. The other one that comes to mind for me, you know, and maybe you too, as a original Southerner, in any case, would be bluegrass Star Trek.
Oh, sure. Well, I love the "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou" soundtrack. That's got just some of the best bluegrass music I've ever heard. To see that brought to Star Trek, yeah, that'd be perfect. Especially if we can get the Mudd Brothers on spoons.
Yeah, absolutely. We need all the Mudd Brothers. How many Mudd Brothers are there now? Three, four?
I've
lost track.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Henry, Harry, Harold.
Harvey.
Herbert. That's five.
Yep.
Herbert Mudd.
Oh, there are five.
Yeah.
The Mudd Five.
They keep coming out of the woodwork. I don't know. I don't know how many there really are.
Well, once one of the Mudd Brothers sort of strikes it rich, suddenly all the other Mudd Brothers come out of hiding, wanting to cash in on the success.
Exactly. That's how it always happens.
All right. Well, sort of like Leo Laporte on Twit or on MacBrick Weekly, I've actually gone and purchased this album while recording the podcast. So I'd recommend everyone else do as well. I'm really looking forward to digging in and hearing some of that smooth jazz.
So, Greg, as we move into movie news and rumors, we have one item to talk about this week, and it is once again the movie title Star Trek Into Darkness. Now,
right.
Do you think that it might possibly mean that the entire crew will be wearing sunglasses as they trek into darkness this time?
Well, you know, at the beginning of Star Trek 09, the captain has to say, you know, polarize the view screen. If the whole bridge crew was just wearing sunglasses already, they wouldn't have to do that.
That's true. Plus, think about how much more comfortable the actors are going to be on the set as the lens flares are going off everywhere. As JJ's there with his iPad, you know, rocking the iPad, rocking it. Because he's really, you know, he's into that organic. It's not none of that computer-generated crap JJ.
No.
This is the real stuff we're talking about here.
Absolutely. And now, can I say still right off, we still don't technically have official confirmation of the title. I'm seeing a lot of people going around saying, oh, it's official, based on an article that said it's official. But until we actually have a Paramount representative say it, or a tweet from the Star Trek Twitter account, we can't really call it official. But what we did have this week was Simon Pegg tweeting about the title, and it sounded pretty official from him. So I'm willing to go with it and say, okay, we can start basing speculation on this being the title.
But let's not forget that apparently they've also registered the domain StarTrekIntoBrightness.com. So it's a 50-50 shot we have here that this is the title. So, but either way, I have to say either way, whether it's Star Trek Into Darkness or Star Trek Into Brightness, having the sunglasses on, you're covered. I mean, you can't
absolutely
go wrong
yeah.
right here.
Well, yeah, I just feel like if you're a Starfleet officer, you ought to have sunglasses on at all times just to cover all your bases.
Oh, all right. So what I want to talk about, seriously, Greg, is one of our followers on Twitter, Michael Sheridan, who is Sheridan Writer on Twitter. He writes for a site called Tailslate, and he wrote an article about this title. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, he admits himself at the end of the article that this is just purely speculation. I'm just going out on a limb with all this, but it seems plausible. Mm. His take on it, though, what he asks is, does Star Trek Into Darkness title confirm Gary Mitchell as the villain?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before. Gary Mitchell was in the comic, but let's put that aside for now and just talk about, do you want to see Gary Mitchell as the villain? Do you think that would be a dynamic villain for a film?
I think it could be. First of all, we have that connection between Kirk and Mitchell, that mm-hmm. they were close friends, you know, they were at the Academy. Of course, in the JJ universe, like everyone that we know was at the Academy together. Apparently, they're all within 2 years of age. But you know, we often talk about how we want relationships, we want connections between the characters. And I think someone like Gary Mitchell could give us a much more interesting story than someone like Nero or Shinzine or Cybok did, or you know, these people who come in from the outside and they don't really, even if they're a half brother like Cybok, they don't really have that connection to our characters. this could work better.
Yeah, that's true. I would like to see somebody with a closer connection. I don't know if we're going to get it, though. But, I mean, you can build that over the course of a movie. You know, if you can have the character interacting early on before he's a villain and then have mm-hmm. him revealed to be a villain. I think mm-hmm. that's what we're moving towards with Cumberbatch. And that would work with Mitchell, too. You know, start him off. Don't have him appear a villain. Have him sort of come in, be a friend to them. Maybe he's already on the ship. And then slowly reveals that he actually has sinister motives. Right, and Mitchell, right. Yeah, Mitchell could do that really well. I mean, I really loved the version of Where No Man Has Gone Before that they had in the comics. I could see them doing it on the big screen. They need, you know, more to happen, make it a bigger story. But no, I could absolutely see that.
I'm still having trouble reconciling the fact that the comics are supposed to lead into the movie, and then they killed Gary Mitchell in the comics.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, they could be telling the backstory to the comic. It's
That's
possible.
True. It's possible. I don't know. I really think that, not to put too much of a damper on it, but I don't think there's much we can learn from the title. I think we'll learn what Into Darkness means when we're watching the film.
Right.
And I do think, though, and I want to ask your opinion, do you think it will be a metaphorical darkness or a literal darkness or both?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's the question, you know, here that Michael asks in his article. The reason he got to thinking about it is that in Where No Man Has Gone Before, they are on a mission to leave the galaxy. Yeah. So they're literally going into darkness, to an area where there are no stars. What Michael says, he says, so the idea of Into Darkness could suggest that they are leaving the galaxy, going beyond the stars, or perhaps just going somewhere else that could lead to the same effect or something similar. That's assuming the title has a double meaning, that the crew is actually going, quote, into darkness, and that they are emotionally going to a dark place. So
right, right.
Yeah.
Now, I do still like the idea. There's some other ideas I had for why the crew went into darkness. One of them is that, you know, Chekhov sort of bumped the dimmer switch on the bridge.
Exactly.
So, I mean, there's lots of ways that could the crew itself could be thrust into darkness. They could fly into a cave. There's lots of space caves. So I don't want to jump to a conclusion that they're going to be leaving the galaxy just because things are getting a little less bright.
Well, this is an interesting idea anyway. We'll see. Like you said, I said, the two things we know. One is that we know that the title looks a lot better when it's set in a cursive script with a full stop at the end. And
I'm glad I got that to you so you could put that. I don't know if everyone didn't see the enhanced podcast from last week, the podcast artwork. Definitely go back and check that out.
It's great. Yeah, it's right there on your iPhone, on your iPad, in your... use Downcast, Android, whatever. Artwork should be right there.
Yeah.
Star Trek Into Darkness, full stop.
Period.
Yes. It's excellent. So I think that's one thing we know. And the other thing is that after you watch the movie, I think you'll know exactly why they chose the title.
Yeah, I think that's...
But until then, we will just think, this is maybe not the best title.
Yeah. Now, the last thing I want to talk about before we move on to the feature is when you think we're going to get a trailer for the film. Obviously, last time we got an early trailer because the film was supposed to come out in December, then it got moved to May. This time, they already know it's going to be in May. Do you think maybe The Hobbit will have a trailer on it? That's December.
It could be. Now, actually, we went to see Madagascar 3 about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And there actually was a Star Trek trailer, not a trailer of footage from the movie, but a trailer of JJ talking about the movie.
Oh,
and
really?
That it was going to be a more character-driven tale. It was going to be more about relationships and more about people than
cool.
The previous
so
movie.
Like one of those before the trailers sort of telling you what's coming up. In film. Oh, God, I didn't know they were running one of those already.
Well, I don't think they are in the States. As you know, from living in Japan, it's kind of a popular thing in Japan where you have the director or an actor come on right. before a TV show or before a movie and just talk for like a, you know, a 2-minute clip.
Right. Yeah.
About the creative process. So that was actually there already. As far as a real trailer, like where we can see them, where we can see the welders repairing yeah. the Enterprise from the
That's
first
what I
movie.
See. Repairing those. I want to see somebody going in with needle and repairing Chris Pine's face, which got punched like 47 times over the course of 2009.
Right. Taking, you know, getting all the fingernail scratches out of Spock's back.
Yes. These are very important things, and I want extreme close-ups. Yes. When do you think that's coming?
I think that we could see a first trailer, a very basic teaser trailer, around the holidays.
Okay.
Yeah. Around December sometime, probably.
Yeah. I'd be extremely surprised if The Hobbit didn't have a Star Trek Into Darkness trailer on it. I think the only question is, are we going to see it before then? And I guess that's what remains to be seen.
Hey, what are you looking so happy about?
Can't you guess?
No.
Well, I'll tell you. It's so nice to have a man around the house. Oh, so nice to have a man around the house. Someone sweet who's glad he found you, who will put his arms around you.
And his kisses just astound you.
It's so nice. Oh, a house is just a house without a man.
He's the necessary evil in your plan.
Someone kind who knows you treasure.
Any simple little pleasure.
Like a full-length mink to cover last year's blouse. It's so nice to have a man around the house.
Early TNG maintained a heavy TOS flavor despite the new ship and the new crew. The heavy-handed black-and-white commentary wrapped stories over which Gene Roddenberry still had full control. And one such story attempted to address gender inequality by forcing the crew into negotiating with a matriarchal society. And today we're going to discuss that episode, and to help us do that, we have back with us, after a long hiatus, friend of the show, Brian Finifter. Hello, Brian.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back.
And we also have with us Trek FM Managing Editor, Mistress Charlene Schmidt. Hello, Char.
Thank you for addressing me with the appropriate title. Always good to be back.
Isn't it First Mistress in the episode?
I didn't want to get too carried away.
I see. Yeah.
You don't want to be
presumptive. Okay.
Usually she just says, I'm the elected one.
Right.
This is true.
So. The elected one, yes. Well, I was going to say, just Mistress by itself kind of carries a little bit more of a BDSM thing. That's not present in the episode.
Oh, Brian, you'll have to listen to last
but...
week because that's all we talked about.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Pretty much, yes. That's why you really need to listen to the show, Brian.
Right.
As we're talking.
Yeah, it was a good time.
All right.
I don't doubt it.
So, guys, this is, well... I don't know. This episode is, of course, known by its original title, Lady Planet.
Yeah.
And some people know it by its working title, which was Space Flu.
Yes, yes.
This episode, I've always remembered this episode by the ridiculous outfit that Riker wears. Mm-hmm. And I do have to say, if you have not seen this episode in HD on the remastered, please go buy the Blu-rays right now.
Yeah, there's detail to Jonathan Frakes' chest hair that you just didn't know was there. It's really incredible.
It just simply wasn't captured in the NTSC. Yeah.
Not at all. I mean, it's incredible. I actually started laughing when he came out with the outfit. It's like a carpet.
Yeah,
I mean, and when you see it in HD, and even my wife was watching with me, she started laughing also. She's like, it's everywhere. Well, this is completely covered.
Your wife wasn't turned on? Because, I mean, I thought that was the point. So far be it from an episode of Star Trek, especially in the first season, to miss the mark on what it's trying to do.
You know, there's a fine line between... the perfect amount of chest hair and just crossing that line. And well, in standard definition, I think maybe they captured what they were going for. But in HD, it's just a little too intense.
Well, there's an awful... Yeah.
Well, in standard definition, the line is a lot more blurred. In HD, the line is much crisper. So, exactly. You know, it's easier to find someone on the
wrong side. This is a show filled with chests. I mean, you've got Trent, who I don't know if they just found a hairless man or if he's been waxed. You've got Jean-Luc Picard, who's in the sheets as much as possible.
I will not pervert that line.
Well, you don't need to, Char, because remember, in the episode itself, Beverly tells Jean-Luc, you have an appointment in your cabin, Captain.
With the bed. This is true. I have this in my notes among many other rather wonderfully hilarious lines when taken out of context.
They really are. But the thing was, the Picard one, like down on the planet, I could accept the fact that, okay, well, these women, they like to dress all the men on the planet like Peter Pan, and they all have to wear these open-chested outfits. But come on the ship, does Picard really need to be in the bed, topless, with the blanket pulled up just to his waist? You remember when Enterprise came out and everyone was all up in arms about how they had too many underwear shots and they had the decontamination rub down? This is 1988. And they're already trying to sex up the Enterprise.
I felt like they were trying to...
Well, come on. I mean, go back to the original series, and I see you've managed to get your shirt off. It didn't begin or end with Next Generation or Enterprise. That's for sure. It's just a matter of... I guess it's a matter of degrees and tastefully done. But I don't think anybody's going to level the accusation of tasteful at...
Right,
the first season of Next Generation or Angel
One.
I think one of the problems they're running into is, honestly, I feel like they're making Picard ridiculous. You've got this great captain, and I think what they should have done was spend the whole first season making sure that he was as spot on as possible. But instead, they're humiliating him.
Yeah,
and not really. He never recovers from the humiliation. He's You know, at the beginning of the episode, he's normal captain, but immediately he's hit with a snowball. He's bitching it at Wesley for no reason. And then he spends the whole rest of the episode coming down with the flu. And, I don't know, me last week, you know, coming down with the flu, no one wants to see that. And you especially don't want to see your captain going through that.
No. And can I just say that Picard with space flu, he acts like such a freaking baby. I mean, okay, you are the captain of the starship, for crying out loud, and you look and sound like you're on your deathbed, buddy. And I tell you what, I've had to go to work when I've had the space flu, and you know what?
Mm-hmm.
You just suck it up and you do it, but man.
You know, James T. Kirk was, and what was the episode? Journey to Babel. He had come down with something awful, and he could barely stand, but... He came to the bridge and sort of pretended to be okay so that Spock would go give his dad a transfusion. And then he was fine.
Yeah.
Like, all James Kirk had to do was pretend to be okay, and he can lead a starship. Meanwhile, Picard can't do anything but sort of cuddle with his sheets.
I'm so miserable, Beverly. Do something to help. That's you.
Right. And this leads to one of the best lines in The Next Generation, I think, which is down on the planet when Riker calls the Enterprise. He says, "Riker, Enterprise." And then you hear, "This is the Enterprise. This is Beverly."
Yes.
And then Yar says, "Things must be worse up there than we thought."
Yes, this is also in my notes.
Is this showing like Yar's secret contempt for Beverly? Oh,
I
God.
Think so,
they've
yes.
got Beverly in
I
charge.
I think this is just Yar speaking for the audience, what they're actually thinking.
Yeah.
Right here. Oh, man. Beverly is in control of the ship now. This is bad.
It was the.
They let a woman drive?
We all know what happened in Generations when.
Well,
yeah.
Exactly.
At least because. Beverly gets commands later on, mm-hmm. like season six or something.
Yeah,
with
she does.
The Borg,
yeah.
That whole thing, and she flies the damn thing into the sun. Blah blah blah. At least at that point, they had established enough that okay, like half the crew is down on this planet, and so she's the only one left. here in this episode, the whole idea of the chain of command is all over the place. It's like, okay, Picard's out of commission, Riker's down there, so it's like, what, I guess it goes to number four. And it's a classic beginning of Next Generation. It's like, who's the chief engineer of the week, and why are they not around? Like, why are they not the third or fourth in line to command when half the crew is sick? It's like, so it goes from the captain to the first officer to, like, the junior part-time blind helmsman guy.
Right.
And then once he's out of commission, then it goes to the chief medical officer. How does any of that make sense in any way, shape, or form?
I know. Picard turns the bridge over to Geordi, and then Geordi's like the little kid in the chair.
Yeah.
And
which is a great moment, and it's, you know, it's very nicely done by LeVar Burton when he sits in the chair and is this feeling of like it's the guy, it's the, you know, it's the ensign on his second day on the job, and he gets to sit in the big chair, and that how overwhelming and, you know, incredible of a moment that is for that character. Very nicely done. Plot-wise, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Right. It's like, seriously, are the only commissioned officers on the ship our seven featured stars? Like, there's a night shift.
Yeah.
There's, like, three shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's people working in astrometrics. Like, there's other lieutenants and lieutenant commanders on the ship who could assume command at any moment.
There's a thousand people on that ship. Granted, some of them are families and children and teachers and whatnot, and the bartender, sure, but there's got to be at least several hundred people worth of officers to go, okay, there's the head of the astrometrics division probably gets command more than the junior part-time pilot guy at that point. I mean, at least Geordi ends up being the chief engineer eventually, but at that point he's not, so it's, and it's very... At this point, it's very awkward in the sense that, again, where the hell is the chief engineer?
Yeah, like, Geordi even wants to abandon the bridge to run down to engineering, and Worf is like, no, they have it under control. Of course they have it under control. Geordi, you're the helmsman, and now you're in command for some unknown reason. They don't need you in engineering. This is a starship.
Yeah. Apparently the chief engineer is still down there, so he probably has it under control.
Yeah, I guess you have to assume that eventually everybody gets knocked out by the space flu. Yeah. Eventually.
Well, they do eventually. Yeah, there's that great pull-away shot of the entire bridge empty except for Data sitting in the captain's chair.
Yeah, that's true. No, can we... I guess we're on this whole tangent. We're talking about the flu at the moment. Where does the flu come from? Like, typically someone comes back from an away mission. Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, here's the thing. And this is another completely ridiculous aspect of the episode. It comes from
it
the
seems
holodeck.
That way.
Okay, yeah, thank
it
you.
Comes I think that's the point. It comes from that snowball, or maybe not, maybe just coming from the holodeck itself. But the holodeck creates it, and it gets sent to Picard through getting hit by the snowball. And that is how the entire ship ends up sick.
Okay,
so I don't know how that's possible.
Since when does the holodeck create viruses?
It's not. It's completely it's the writers of Next Generation just not having the rule book worked out for themselves yet.
Right. This
we need this kind of awkward B plot to tie up and create this false sense of danger in the third or fourth act, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I guess it'll come from the holodeck, because
that's
how it works.
The thing with this.
Nobody stopped to think for a moment to go, wait, why would the holodeck work this
that's
way?
That's the thing with this episode. It's like a series of rules. Like, okay, we've got to beam down to the planet, and now they can't beam back because everyone's sick. There's more to it than that, but the only reason everyone gets sick is because there's a moment where everything would be solved if Riker could just beam everyone up. But because we need the episode to keep going, we have this whole B plot that takes half of the episode.
Right.
And makes no sense.
This is the beginning of TNG where, you know, the whole idea of not having a chief engineer is that the Galaxy class starship is so advanced that it doesn't need a chief engineer because it can run itself.
Right.
I think even, is it Yar in this episode says that the ship can fly itself?
Right, it can just fly on autopilot.
I don't remember if it's Yar or someone else, but... So at this point, they're still like, well, the transporters cannot malfunction because the ship is just too advanced for anything to go wrong with the transporters. Because later in Star Trek, they would just, the transporters wouldn't work, and there would be some kind of energy field around the planet that prevents shuttlecraft.
Yeah, Angel One would have just like a weird atmosphere. There'd be ionized radiation in the troposphere, and we just can't beam down. Oh well.
Yeah.
Right.
But here, it's holographic snowballs make everyone sick, so that no one is capable of beaming anyone up. Transporters are fine. There's just no one to press the button, basically, because everyone is in sick bay.
Right. But apparently the computer is smart enough to press the button for you, because it is.
To be fair, the idea of a ship-wide quarantine is not the worst idea. Like, this could be a whole episode.
Sure. But the virus needs to come from somewhere.
Yes.
But the problem is the danger that it sets up doesn't even present the problem that they needed to present plot-wise. Because you can say, okay, we will beam you into one of the shuttles. We'll even take the shuttle and, you know, stick it outside next to the Enterprise. And that's our quarantine. As if it, I mean, it's, you're talking about a fully fledged spaceship as it is that is already airtight by necessity. I'm pretty sure you can somehow create a subsection of one part of the spaceship to be airtight from everything else. That's kind of how spaceships have to work in order to be a spaceship.
And also, they figure out...
this whole idea of, like, we can't make one hallway a quarantine is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
On the face of it.
But it's all about, let's create these artificial rules to keep the plot going. Like, even once they could beam back... once our crew could beam back, oh, now they're going to be executed, so let's not leave because... I don't like this episode very much. And the B plot is a big part of it. And it's a case of the writers just throwing pieces together. But yeah, I'd love to see an episode where the ship had to be quarantined and where it really mattered. And everyone was getting sick. And it's like one by one, the crew's falling away and Beverly can't figure out what's going on. Then Beverly gets sick. It could be really dramatic and interesting. I think the problem with this episode is it never gets interesting, and it starts silly with a snowball, continues to be silly with Picard in bed, and it's a perfume. It's a perfume virus. I think that's at the core of it.
Well, we have that basic plot several times. I mean, the space virus taking out the crew is an old and tired trope of Star Trek.
And I'm sorry,
I honestly... right now, thinking about it, I can't come up with a good example, like an episode of where
where it's done well, right? Yeah. Well, let's not forget here that the whole space flu is, again, the B plot designed just to make it difficult for them to beam up in the first place. So the whole point of the episode is to talk about the role of men and women in the society and the dominance of men. Of course, this was done during the late 80s. Talk about the dominance of men in the society. So they're going to flip it around completely to this planet where women dominate the men.
Right.
Dress them up like Peter Pan. And I also like here that when they first approach the planet, that Troy says, oh, it sounds like my planet.
Yeah.
Right.
Which of course later I think is not really how Beta Z is portrayed, right?
No.
But so they have
because Troy is that paragraph strong.
Oh, you know it,
right? For sure.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about here, of course, throughout the thing, we can talk about the actual social message, which is very, very much in the vein of some TOS episodes, which is completely out in the open, hit you over the head with it, and completely black and white.
Yeah.
And it's just to the point where it almost doesn't connect. I get the point. I know what they're trying to say, but the way they present it, it's too elementary. It's just like, hey, it should not be like this. You should just turn everything on its head. But before we get to that, Diplomat Troy.
Oh.
So suddenly Picard decides that the best person to speak on behalf of the Federation is the counselor sitting next to him. First communication with this planet.
Because she's a woman. That's it.
And that's the only reason that he comes up with.
Well, okay, that's kind of where this episode fails right then and there. 1 minute in, you know this is not going to be that great of an episode when Troy is the diplomat in charge.
Yes.
Really? Okay. No.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem is, like you were saying, Chris, it doesn't... It knows what it wants to do, but it so completely fails at doing anything, you know, along those lines. And it really can't decide whether it's trying to be a critique of, you know, this. Okay, we're going to critique a society where one gender is superior to the other, and we're talk about how it should be equal, and because we're just flipping it, that's why it's science fiction. Or it also has these elements of, well, we're the Federation, so we respect other cultures, and this is another culture, so we must respect it in Prime Directive, and blah, blah, blah. So it constantly seesaws back and forth between those two, doing neither of them competently at any given moment. So it's like, okay, we're going to respect their culture by, you know, letting the female counselor, letting our female crew member make first contact, but then we're going to send guys down with the landing party and as well as the female, and we're going to make the landing party led by a male crew member as opposed to a female crew member like Yar or Troy or whoever, because we're equal and we, that's how we do things. It's, it's like, either, you know, pick one and do one and make your commentary out of that, that meat of the plot. However you're going to do it, just say, no, I'm the guy in charge of the ship, right, so you have to deal with me, or completely put the women in charge and explore the idea through the idea through the aspect of putting women in charge of the Enterprise for the duration of the episode. Do either one, but pick one.
The whole thing is like, but they don't. If you had Riker really in charge, because the ladies do take over just a little bit while he's off doing his thing, that kind of takes away, it steals his thunder a little bit from what he gets to do in this episode. And of course, the whole idea of Riker coming down at all, I think, is just to sleep with this lady. That's it, and that's all. That's what he's destined to do.
Yeah, of course.
That's simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can we also talk about how ridiculous his behavior in this? Yes. It's like, oh, I must respect the culture and you know, aspects of the society, because I'm going to get laid in the process.
That is his motivation for sure, isn't it?
Right. Right.
He'll respect the culture as long as he's getting laid.
Yeah. If the cultures and respects, you know, made were, you know, or something else, I think he would have been, you know, slightly less eager, or he probably would have come down more on the side of, no, we're equal. What would have been interesting is if it started off that way, like he thinks, oh, it's, you know, I'm going to respect the, quote unquote, their, you know, rituals, and that means I'm going to, you know, get some. And he starts down that path thinking that's what it's going to be, and then they flip it and he has to, you know, really, you know, honestly subjugate himself in some very unpleasant way. And I'll let your imagination run with whatever that could be. But, you know, basically, you know, his expectations are foiled. And it's like, oh, wow, I thought this was going to be some cool fantasy roleplay sort of a thing.
Well, that's not what he signed up for.
No, I actually just have to do the dishes or whatever it is. Well,
that's the issue with the episode is I don't think the writers knew how to deal with it. They started with a basic premise like, okay, we're going to comment on male-dominated societies by showing a female-dominated society. And, you know, they sort of did that in TOS a bunch of times, but the, you know, they commented on racism by showing the half-white, half-black, and then the other side people. I really think it falls down here, though, and I don't think they knew how to write it. Because as Brian says, yeah, the tone kept shifting. They never knew if they were respecting the culture, if they were laughing at it, or if they were really saying, well, this isn't right at all. What would have been a lot more interesting is show a male-dominated society and show how our crew doesn't buy into it at all.
Yeah.
Show, you know, show Yar being disrespected and show her being just like, no, I'm a perfectly normal human being. I think they fall down because they just don't know what to do with the premise because it's so weird and they go so far in the making it matriarchal. I mean, putting Trent in that ridiculous outfit and then putting Riker in it too. I mean, imagine an episode of Voyager where Janeway puts herself in some slinky getup to respect the male leader of a culture. She would never do that.
No, good example.
So why have Riker do it?
Right.
It's ridiculous.
He's getting laid.
Well, and that's the thing. And
that's
and
all.
If Janeway did that, well, and sure, and this is where we've got, honestly, in our culture, this double standard where it's okay for Riker to go down.
Yeah, and this is where the double standard of our society today intrudes upon And so as opposed to, you know, Star Trek being supposedly a fictional, you know, a depiction of a real society somewhere where we figured all this stuff out, and presumably the people creating this society have it all figured out, it kind of reveals the man behind the curtain going, no, you know, it's... And it very much is this... I think that the cynical or the mean-spirited way to put it is that the writers and the producers of this episode, they tried to imagine a society in which women were dominant, but they simply didn't have the imagination to pull it off.
They're such chauvinists, and they're such stuck in the 20th century that they can't even imagine what it would be like for women to be in charge of a society. So they make it this ridiculous thing. They end up revealing their own biases in the process.
That's true. Yeah, this is not it. Yeah. You know what I would have preferred, actually? Okay, Riker has to go into his strange getup. Well, I wanted to see Troy and Yar get into the when in Rome situation as well. I want him to see with the massively extended shoulder pads in the tunic. I mean, fit in a little bit. If that's what you want to do to immerse yourself in the culture, fine. But be equal about it.
Right.
Among with the many deeper issues they could have explored with this kind of a scenario that just, like you said, does...
I think that's the mean way to put it. I think the nicer, giving them the benefit of the doubt scenario would be that they wanted to portray this idea, but at the same time, they didn't want to portray women more negatively than they had to. So if they really wanted to show the society as being as potentially unjust as our patriarchal societies, then they would have had to show women really being, you know, really coercing men into doing things that they didn't want to do. And it's like, oh, well, I'm trying to be chivalrous in a sense, and I don't want to depict women doing that. But if you fall into that trap as well, then you're like, well, then you're still being chauvinistic and you're still being misogynistic in a way. Just kind of in the opposite. Oh, well, women are the fairer, gentler sex, and they're not capable of such, you know. And I can't bear to, you know, depict a scenario where they're that mean and coercive. It's like, well, that's still sexist in its own way. And so if you're orchestrating that drama, it's your job to imagine that and force yourself to.
I wonder
that.
What this episode would have been like if it were later on and you had someone like Jerry Taylor writing this instead of the men, because I feel a little bit like, again, I said this early TNG for me is a lot like TOS. And even though this was in 1988, I almost feel like the view of society that they're basing this on is a 1960s TOS view of the world. It's not the reality that the society was in the late 1980s. That's it. It just feels it's.
I agree with that. I think
very, very
point,
black
actually.
And white. It's very
really
like
is.
Men dominate women. Women are subservient all the time. Let's flip it around. Let's make the men subservient in this world.
Yeah, it's more of a, you know, kind of sort of glancing at trying to be a depiction of more of the 1950s. But yeah, if you were really trying to go for a 1980s, you know, commentary, then there should have a better setup would have been. There's kind of lip service to equality, but I mean, the big deal in the 80s was the concept of the glass ceiling. You know, people were supposedly equal, men and women were supposedly equal, but women just couldn't break through this certain level that everybody understood was there, even if you couldn't see it. So depict a scenario where supposedly they're on the level with each other, but all of the women are running the world and the men are not, despite their best attempts to do so. And show something along those lines, and then you're really talking
Instead
about something
these
that
weak
was
servants
going on at the time
had.
The episode was produced.
Right. And I think it's showing Star Trek, well, at least Next Generation early on, their inability to really show a foreign culture and really show the details of it. There's only, you've got like the one room where there's the mistress there with her servants, and then you've got the hotel room that everyone's staying in together, apparently. And that's really all they've got. I've been watching Doctor Who, and it seems to do a much better job of showing everything. Like, if they go to the 1900s, we see servants, we see masters, we see all sorts of things. There's racists around, and we comment on, like, they're not going to blatantly do it, but, like, yeah, that was racist, and that was wrong. they're able to manage that. And I don't feel like the TNG writers at this point had the ability to really delve into it. Like, what we should have seen was, we should have really seen the men being, you know, something happening to them where they were trying to work up and there was that glass ceiling. I mean, Trent's really the only male we see in the society.
Yeah, just
And I don't even know what is the equivalent of Trent in 1950s society. Like, is there some lady that hangs around the Congress and sort of ushers people to their hotel rooms? I don't think so.
No.
I mean, the closest example I can think of is like the Working Girl, Working Girl, that kind of idea, but not really that per se. Because he's basically more of, you know, I've been rewatching Game of Thrones recently, so he's more like a handmaiden to the queen or something. It's like, okay, and that's the scenario. So call it a medieval society where the women are, you know, in charge and all the men are the
manservants
sort of thing.
Yeah, but I would have liked to see some of the men in the society, like even in Game of Thrones, we see the women, you know, getting themselves into leadership positions in crazy ways, given it's Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. But in this, we see Trent, who doesn't appear to, he's just doing whatever he does. And then we've got, I guess we should actually talk about the survivors from the Odin, who, by the way, looks like Starbuck from the original Battlestar Galactica.
So say we all.
Exactly what I thought when he came in, and he holds the mug up. Yeah.
Yes, I've been expecting you.
And that's full 80s. On 80s. Yeah.
So we see
not
him,
just the first lift, but the follow up toast as well.
Yes, I and so he, but he still is only like saying a couple things like, "Well, we just sort of want to live in these caves with our wives, and we're fine." Like, we don't really see this revolution or evolution. We don't see it at any point, and I think that's another problem that I have with this episode.
Yeah.
When it's even, they ask a question. They ask him a question, and he immediately, before, I believe it's Yar who delivers the line, before she can even finish, he's like, "I can't answer that." It's like the writers don't even explore the issue at all.
Can't go there.
Here's a question. I can't answer that.
Yeah.
The writers themselves barely have enough imagination to ask the question, and they have absolutely none.
Right.
No ability to answer the question at all in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, they bring it to Starbuck, and they this is, I forget when it is, but they basically give him the option to leave, and all he can do is say, "I don't want to be executed, but I don't want to leave."
Yeah,
like, he won't give a reason. Like, he's going to let his family be killed just so they don't have to go off to another planet where they're not being persecuted. Like,
yeah, what?
That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, not the best thought out plan there, is it?
Well, imagine all the time, if we talk about what we want them to explore here in terms of how the society should actually operate, all of the time that they spend with the space flu plot, if all of that time had been put into exploring the society on the planet, which is actually the message of the episode...
Yeah.
They could have really delved into something, and this could have been a good episode.
Yeah, very possible.
Yeah, and I mean, again, this works all back into the idea of the episode doesn't know whether it wants to condemn or, you know, sanction differences. I mean, that's the thing about Star Trek in general. Like, the weakness of the Star Trek philosophy is ultimately, the bottom line is we should, you know, accept people that are different from us, and that's a very grand and noble philosophy, and, you know, one I'm very thankful to Star Trek for providing me. But in episodes like this, it doesn't know whether it's that or it's the more like original series kind of gunboats. We're going to ride in and tell you about truth, justice, and the American way. And, you know, we're going to give you a righteous speech at the end of the episode, which this episode totally has. Riker giving one of the grandest early, you know, Star Trek righteous speeches of all time. About truth, justice, and the American way, and everybody going, "Oh, you're right. From now on, we are going to fly the stars and stripes, and you know, pray to Uncle Sam." And it's like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to do the one thing or the other? What is the? how does the definition work in your head as to what is an acceptable difference of a society versus what is it? I mean, and the other problem is, like you guys have already said, we don't really see the male subjects of this society at all. And the one guy we do see at all is perfectly fine with the society.
Yeah.
There's not anybody at all going, no, there's not no guy we meet going, I want to be the elected one. Why can't I be the elected one? What's, why not? What's the deal? We only see one guy, and he's just this petulant little prick of a guy going, it's like, okay, well, if you're fine with this,
then there's no problem.
Then even if we, then there's no problem.
Right.
And even if we have a problem with it, then fuck us. It doesn't matter. We can have all the righteous speeches we want, but we're going to leave, and you're an entire planet full of people. So we, when we leave, you're going to do what you want to do anyway.
Like, seriously,
there's nothing.
There's an outpost being attacked by Romulans. Now, Romulans are, evil people who want to kill people. And now we have Federation citizens being threatened by the evil people who want to kill people. How about at some point we go deal with that?
Yes. We are choosing to give a righteous speech about truth, justice in the American way to this group of people who are almost to a man or almost to a woman in this case, are totally fine with the situation and an entire planet of people. And we are going to choose to give the righteous speech to them as opposed to go save our actual active Federation citizens
right.
who are actively under attack and under being threatened by a hostile alien force.
And they keep saying,
this
they
is
keep
our
getting.
Choice.
They keep getting the reports that there are more and more Romulans coming. There are
Hello?
More of them.
Get on it.
They're massing. And Picard actually says to Beverly at one point in the episode, he says, well, Doctor, Starfleet has important business for us after this. And I tweeted, I finished the sentence for him. Doctor, Starfleet has important business for us after we stop dicking around with this lady planet. It's like...
True.
I mean, that was the whole setup of the episode. Yes, there's something, there's a big problem going on over here with the Romulans. And these people,
big deal happening.
These people don't want to leave the planet. They're fine with everything.
Fine, go!
But and then you have Data calculating how long the USS Berlin can sustain an attack from multiple Romulan battle cruisers, as they call them in this episode.
Oh, they're fine.
Before, no big deal.
Before their shields fail. And of course, Data figures out that Beverly has 47
minutes. Of course, 47.
To find a cure.
Because
at that point, I was like, the crew is doomed.
Because, by the way, that's how battles work, and you can predict them down to the second based on what your enemy is going to do. And second of all, and this may be a minor point, but I would love the opportunity to ask Data this in that situation. It's like, okay, does that calculation of time include how many casualties the Berlin could sustain? So how many Federation and Starfleet officers and crewmen are you condemning to death to stick around to give a righteous speech? So the Berlin can last up to about 20 people dying, and then we better be there to help them out. It's like, okay, so 20 Starfleet officers in this imaginary scenario have given their lives so you could stick around to give a righteous speech.
Perfectly normal in an average Starfleet
ridiculous.
Day.
Well, it was important for Riker and Yara and Troy to hang around so that they could be extras in Harry Potter and the Magic Death Orb.
Yes, this is so true. I'm hoping that the next time we review a TNG season one episode, we're going to talk about the Horcruxes next.
What is with that? That's Trent's other other role is to be executioner.
Yes, which he also has no problem with.
He's fine. He's perfectly happy executing the men who crash landed here. These peaceful men living in the middle of nowhere who just want to live with their wives and be happy.
No big deal.
He's gonna put his hand on the magic globe.
I think that Trent and Mistress Beata have something going on.
They've got to, right?
Did you see?
No. Look at his face when Riker and Beata are hanging out. He's just all puffy about it.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's it. When he comes in the room, he seems really jealous.
Yeah,
I think
he's got a problem
with
that.
I think they had
Beata.
See, I think they had something going on. I think they had sort of like servants with benefits going on. But then Riker shows up and Mistress Beata sees the chest hair. And she realizes she's not had a real man in so long. And Trent realizes he's not a real man.
She says this much in the episode.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, which goes back to the whole like chauvinism on autopilot thing. It's like, oh, a real man is a guy like Riker who comes in and is headstrong.
Right.
It's like,
wow.
So a man can't be sensitive or can't, a man can't enjoy being for lack of a better word, a man can't enjoy being the submissive partner in a relationship where the more traditionally, from our point of view, the female kind of role, a man can enjoy taking that. Here's a crazy thought. What if they had kids and the woman had the job and the guy stayed home and raised the kids?
That could never work.
What a weird alien society that would be.
That could never work.
That would never ever work.
How dare you even think of such a thing? How dare you?
I should be sentenced to death.
Here's the thing. I think we found Trent's glass ceiling right here. He is unable to please the elected first mistress or whatever the heck she is.
Right.
And therefore...
I would love...
That is what he strives to be, is he strives to be enough for her.
Yeah.
I would love, basically, if somebody came along, and in my dreams it's me, who basically was able to redo Star Trek and for like HBO or Showtime or something, and make it basically be what Game of Thrones is to Lord of the Rings. Game of Thrones is an R-rated version of Lord of the Rings.
Right.
I want an R-rated version of Star Trek where people show up at these planets and like, Trent's dick is just too small. I'm sorry, that's it. And that's all there is to, and so I mean that, but
and he doesn't even know how to use it properly.
Right. But, and this is where Beata puts Riker, ties him up and puts him in the ball gag.
Because you gotta have that, Greg?
I mean, it's a joke, but it's essentially nobody's throat really gets cut in Lord of the Rings. People's throats get cut in Game of Thrones because that's how war actually works when you fight war with swords. And it's like, if this society were to actually exist and you really want to explore the power differential, have it in such a way that women rape men and men live in fear of a whole society the way the women in our society do. They live their lives in fear of rape.
Right.
And we get a scene where a woman rapes a man and that's a full on actual scene in the same way we would see a scene like that in Game of Thrones. Like,
absolutely.
I would love that for that to exist and for us to really explore the idea through that.
If you're going to swap it and have women be in power, you've got to do it in a way that's going to shock the male viewership.
Yeah.
You can't do it in a way that's going to... When chauvinists watch this episode, they're looking at Riker. It's like, yes, I'm going to go down to the planet and I'm going to sleep with the president and I'm going to be the best she's ever had. And then I'm going to give a self-righteous speech and I'm going to go on my merry way.
She's the Bill Clinton. Yeah.
Being a man is awesome.
At the end of the day, it's on the one hand, it's attempting to be this insightful revelation about power dynamics in society. At the end of the day, it's still completely a male fantasy.
Oh, absolutely.
Expression of a male fantasy.
Yes. I'm going to
show Riker. I'm going to show this woman what a real man is like, and then I'm going to be on my merry way. And sow my seeds elsewhere.
Yes.
It's an interesting point, too, Brian, that it's been 2 weeks ago now when I was talking to Ride, and you can, on MatterStream, there's a whole interview with him. But in the middle of that, we started talking about that exact thing, and I asked him, what would you see as the future of Star Trek, or what would you like to do if you could do it? And it's exactly what he said, was if Star Trek could be on a network like HBO where they could really explore things like that without the kind of vanilla storylines and censorship of
the necessity of being PG
of the networks
is understandable. It's part of the rules when you're playing on network television, and that's fine. But from a storytelling standpoint, as a storyteller, that's what I would love to see. That's what I would love to do.
You feel like they could do so much more. The connection with the audience and the messages could be so much more if they had that.
Yeah, I agree.
Ability to tell that story.
Yeah. If they didn't have to pull those punches. Yeah.
Right.
And if they weren't used to pulling those punches, because I mean, as writing and storytelling is as much a habit as anything else. So if you're week after week, those are the creative choices you have to make. Then those are the creative choices you're going to make, whether you have to or mm-hmm. not. Mm-hmm. And it's like Tolkien, to continue the Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones parallel. Tolkien, based on what he was writing and what he was trying to do, would never have thrown those punches just because that's not what he was doing or who he was. You need somebody to come along who's looking to specifically tell that story and throw those punches. The same way, you know, Martin was like, okay, no, this is what this is. This is what I'm going to do. And I don't know. I'm speculating as to how conscious that was in terms of Lord of the Rings, what he's trying to do, but that's essentially the parallel. So I hope Rod gets the chance. I know he's doing that new Star Trek series with, right?
Mm-hmm, that's
with,
right.
Basically their own version of doing new episodes, which actually, no, that's the one with Grant Imahara, right? As Sulu?
Oh, yeah.
Is that the same one?
That one is Star Trek Continues, is that right?
Is he involved with that one?
I think so.
There are like
anyway,
three
I
of them.
I know some people who know some people. I'm friends of friends with people who are doing that, so... Think, you know, maybe, I don't know. If you're listening, give me a call.
So
anyway,
on to like the conclusion of this episode, they then go in, and we talk about the whole righteous speech thing here. They then go into, well, this isn't a revolution. It's not a revolutionary thing. It's an evolutionary thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
which,
what was your take on this?
Wordplay is always a great basis for massive right. changes in regime and planetary philosophy, because these two words kind of sound alike in a different language. It's like, you made this pun, presumably the universal translator is just humming along and we're not, you know, really thinking about it in the moment. But yeah. it would be presumably the equivalent of going, yes, it's not so much a matter of orange as it is a matter of unicorn. Oh, okay. Is that supposed to be clever? It just makes... you just said a thing. Why is that? Why does that sound... Why do you feel like... Why does it feel like you think you just
why
said something clever?
Why is there a smug look on your face?
Exactly. Why do you look so smug? You just said a sentence. Anyway.
But what was your take on the whole evolutionary thing?
Yeah, Riker walks in and basically gives a Kirk speech. Like, here it is.
Yeah, he absolutely does.
It's just like Kirk would have done on TOS.
Truth, justice in the American way kind of a speech.
But this is TNG, so Riker's doing it while the captain's up on the ship dealing with the space flu.
It's season one of TNG, that's why. Because they're still in this TOS mode.
Right.
They haven't figured out that TNG is TNG yet. So it's like, oh, well. So it's like you're saying... Riker is our Kirk, and Picard isn't Kirk. We know that now, but we still don't really know what Picard is.
Picard?
So we'll give the TOS speech to the closest TOS character that we have.
Yeah.
Eventually they'll figure it out, and then Picard will get the righteous speech.
Yeah, I mean, by season three, Picard would have been given the speech, and it would have been Patrick Stewart, so he would have done it with more gravitas, and it probably would have been better. I mean, it's not a terrible speech, though, Chris. I don't think he flubs it.
No, it's just the fact that it is a speech, I think, that just kind of kills that moment. Like, really?
It's,
you're going to have to be all preachy about it?
It's the fact that it's a completely unwarranted speech.
Yeah, that's
totally
the thing, what Brian said. So this is the thing for me with the speech, is that they go through the whole episode, and again, I know we keep talking about it, they waste half the episode on this whole silly space flu thing. Then you get to the end, it almost feels like the speech comes out of nowhere.
It does.
Actually, even the scene where Mistress Beata says, well, you leave me no choice but to sentence them to death. And my wife said, well, that's sudden. That just came out of nowhere.
What?
It's like, well, you won't take them back with you. I've got to have to kill
them
all.
It's that fake drama again.
It's the Anchorman meme. It's like, well, that escalated quickly. Dun, dun,
dun. Yeah, exactly. And so at the end of this, too, I feel like the speech would have meant more to me if the episode had been exploring that issue. But instead, it's like they get to the end of the episode, and then Riker gives the whole speech about the evolution of society.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing to back. We haven't seen anything to back that up.
Yeah.
No.
Until he delivers his speech.
Yeah, if we'd had a scene with Trent where Trent had revealed something, anything, about how he'd been trying to advance in society, or if we'd seen, like, we only see one of the survivors, like, if we'd seen any of the others and how they'd been trying to integrate themselves in society and they were being rejected, I feel like there's missing scenes in this episode.
And it's because they're wasting so much time on the space flu. We just don't see it. Like, literally, the Odin survivors are living in caves, and everything is fine. And then the Enterprise crew leaves.
They apparently have beer. I mean, they've been living in caves for, what, 7 years, they say it is?
Right, yeah. I mean,
but they're doing well enough to still be drinking beer.
They've got beer and platinum. What else do you need?
Here's a rule. How about if you go to the planet, and everything's fine, just pack it up and leave. Just move on with your lives. Like, apparently everything's fine down there. Okay, sure. I'm done. Let's go fix that Romulan thing.
At the beginning of the episode, Troy says, "The Federation has neglected to visit your planet for far too long."
Yeah.
And, like, Beata's like, "Believe me, you know, we don't feel neglected in any way.
Right. Yeah,
you guys can just go on your way, you know."
And we could also mention the standby Star Trek line of, well, this planet could play
an important
strategic role in the Federation at some point. So we need to treat this situation carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love for them to show up one day and be like, yeah, this planet means crap all. We don't care. We're just going to leave it out for an hour just for the hell of it.
But like you said, Greg, like, Trent, just throw us something, you know, like let us know how you've been reading self-help books, you've been watching videos to try to be able to satisfy Beata better so that when Riker comes in, she's not just completely swept off her feet by this real man with all the high definition chest.
Yeah, show Trent like ordering a pump from the internet.
From the angel.
Just something so we know there's some effort towards evolving in the society, right?
Yeah.
Then the speech would mean something more to me.
There's some differentiation in the society that there's, because like we already said, we literally get one example of this fabled, you know, suppression of the male in the society. And the one guy who's totally fine with it, which I actually like from a dramatic standpoint because it's counterintuitive but true.
Mm-hmm.
There were women... Before women could vote, there were women who felt that they shouldn't vote. I'm sure there were some black people somewhere during slavery that were pretty okay with being slaves, provided they were, you know, the right kind of slaves.
Right, if they were somewhat taken care of.
Didn't maybe have as hard of a time as other guys. They're like, you're gonna screw up. I kind of have an okay thing going here. Don't screw this up for me. And anyway, so I'm sure in any society like that, in any oppressed people, there's going to be a spectrum of belief, people going, some people really clamoring for freedom, revolution, evolution, whatever you call it, and other people going, things are fine the way they are, at least in my own, you know, situation or imagination, I'm okay enough with it, and I don't want you causing trouble, so stop.
Right.
That variety of point of view is going to exist in any of those kinds of situations. So explore
right,
that.
Right, now that could have been really cool.
That's the frustrating thing. There's just so much interesting stuff to do.
Yeah, like, okay, if Trent was perfectly fine with his life and the way it was, what about Trent's friend? Who's not so happy in his life? What about him? Now that could have been kind of cool. And they could have argued and bickered about it, and then we could have had something here.
And then there would have been some justification for the Federation to come in and go, okay, well, there's something's clearly wrong here. And,
yeah.
I mean,
the whole other aspect of this film or this episode that we haven't really touched on, in fact, is that the Next Generation is still in the process of figuring out what their rule book is, and particularly so when it comes to what the Prime Directive means in this situation. Mm-hmm. Before or after, what I forget details-wise, but ultimately, it's like, only making contact with the society if they haven't invented warp drive.
Right.
You don't mess with them until they invent warp drive, and then once they do, they're considered galactic citizens and you, whatever. But here, it's more like, oh, they're just other people and we can't say anything whatsoever. Right. Of course, we're going to because we're all righteous, self-righteous pricks. But we're not supposed to say anything whatsoever regardless of their status. Even though we're explicitly saying... We are hoping someday that we become members of the Federation. And presumably, the Federation Charter says something about equality or egalitarianism in society some way. But exactly how or what or when, all those details None of that detail exists whatsoever.
I think this is a good idea for an episode.
It's a great idea.
I'm totally on board with
an episode.
Yes, let's deal with chauvinism. But by flipping it on its head the way they have, the only thing I get from it is that chauvinists can watch this and say, yes, just I'm also being held down by society. You know, misandry is real. And, you know, there's people who believe that. There's people who believe that in American society, males are being held down by society and that we need to be boosting what men are able to do and talk about how great men are and not be sexist against men. And
there's a subreddit on Reddit called Men's Rights, which if you want that point of view,
there's like posters around in downtown Seattle where it's like, oh, you wouldn't be sexist against a woman, would you? No, because you're a good person. You wouldn't be racist against a black person, would you? No, because you're a good person. Well, you also wouldn't be sexist against a man, would you? Would you? It's like, oh, God, I hate you. But this is a real thing people believe. And nothing in this episode really, it doesn't manage to convince anyone.
Right.
Like TOS actually did a good job of it in that episode with the half white, half black people. It really did show the ridiculousness of complaining about, oh, well, he's darker than I am. That should matter. Like, it really did a good job of it. But I feel like the TNG writers, they either were too entrenched in the patriarchal society themselves, or they didn't have time to really delve into it. Whatever it is, you come out of the other end of this episode and you're just like, I don't know what they were trying to say.
Yeah.
I really don't. And I think it...
Because they didn't manage to say anything at all.
Yeah,
they
that's my problem too. I don't know what I'm supposed to get out of this.
I come out of it knowing what they... I think I know what they were trying to say. I just think they did a really, really, really bad job of
presenting. I know what Riker got out of this. And that's just about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be in Riker's position in this episode. He gets to not really do anything.
Yeah.
He comes down to the planet. He hangs out with the leader of the society while the women go off and do the work.
Yeah.
He gets his chest hair rubbed and he gets laid. And he gives a speech, you know, off the top of his head about equality that, you know, that anybody could get off an inspirational poster. And he beams back. He's really living the dream. And so I guess that's the message of this episode. Join Starfleet as a man. Live the dream.
See the galaxy. Screw half of it. I think if there's a danger... I think if there's a danger to this episode, it's that somebody could watch this episode and feel like this... Oh, okay, yes. Sexism and one-sex-dominated society is a bad thing. I understand that. But because the actual framing of the episode is still so basically chauvinistic in everything it's doing, especially with Riker, somebody could essentially lie to themselves or lie to other people and say, yes, I got that this is a bad thing and it should not happen. But the meat of the episode is still like, oh, but men are awesome and manly men are manly.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't actually work in changing anybody's
point of view. No, not at all.
I mean, I think the point of a story is to show you an imaginary situation and go, okay, if you were in this situation, how would you feel? What would you do? How would you deal with it and react to it and all of that? And the intellectual point of this episode is, sexual dominance from one, is bad. But the actual, situation is Riker is being a manly man and is totally awesome for it.
Right.
It's not like he should... Really, he should be a manly man and get totally screwed over as a result, or have a really bad time
as
a result.
Yeah,
right.
And then have to deal with it. Yeah. And then that would be a situation where somebody who was approaching, who already had that same mindset, would go into the episode, hopefully with that mindset, would come out with something else and go, oh well, if I behave that way, it wouldn't actually work out all that well for me. Maybe I should rethink that when these situations pop up.
Instead, if you are a stud like Riker, you can get whoever you want.
Right.
You can sleep with the president and then be on your merry way.
I mean, it's like,
you can basically be Marilyn Monroe.
Exactly.
Yeah, or,
but not die in a bathtub at the end, I guess. Maybe it's not a great analogy.
My thought was this mistress lady, she's President Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Having sexual relations with Riker.
Yeah, imagine that. Imagine an alien.
I'd not have sexual relations with that alien, Commander Riker.
There you go. Exactly.
Oh my God.
But you get the idea.
Imagine an alien beaming down and just casually having sex with President Clinton.
Like, exactly.
I'm sure President Clinton
would
has.
That seriously be okay? Either
President Clinton. Well, in 1998, yeah, probably. Now, I don't know. He's changed
a bit.
I mean
Hillary. If Hillary is president at any point in the future.
Okay, like, now this
as long as the economy is humming along, who cares?
That's true.
And, you know, it would have been great to have point of view.
Okay.
Somebody, you know, maybe.
I got it.
Maybe have Trent be like, you know, maybe have this happen. And Trent is like, don't you see how terrible and how wrong this is? And have some other random Angel One citizen be like, hey, man, I got a job. I'm fine. I don't care what she does.
Right. That would have been.
They're like, yeah, that's how that works.
That would have been kind of cool. Like how we were talking about Trent's friend. Like, if we would have just reversed it, Trent's not okay, but the friend is like, just, dude, lay low. Shut up. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. We all got jobs. You know, minimum wage is fine.
Right.
You know, unemployment is low. Iran is not really a big deal right now. Or Angel 2, I guess, in this situation. Angel 2 is not a threat, so we're okay. Just don't rustle the bushes here. Let her screw whoever she wants to screw.
Right, but now I have this horrible vision of future President Hillary Clinton screwing with aliens, and it's messing with me. But you know what? Okay, turnabout is fair play. Clinton got Monica Lewinsky.
That's the 3 a.m. phone call. We thought it was a terrible international incident. The 3 a.m. phone call is actually some alien Riker calling her up.
What you wearing?
It's just an alien booty call. That's what it is.
Yeah. You horny?
Hey, are you still up? What time zone are you in again? I forget.
Yeah.
Are you facing the sun right now or away from the sun? I don't remember.
Yeah. What you been doing? Are you horny?
Oh, man.
Is your genitalia external?
Yeah. Are we at 57 minutes yet?
Oh, my God.
58 minutes, whatever. Oh, no, we're
actually,
over.
We're at 103, I think we started this around 57.
So. Yeah.
Oh, my God. There we go. Now it goes off the rails. It's officially an episode of The Ready Room.
Officially off the rails.
I don't know. Between Greg's wine, your vodka.
Yeah, the vodka.
Whatever Brian's drinking, I don't know.
A very inebriating can of Coca-Cola.
Okay. That must be the Triskelion Coca-Cola that has cocaine still
that's
in it.
That's right. That's
exactly.
Correct.
Yeah. Which we found out about last week.
Yes.
That's right. All right. Well, I guess we have passed an hour, so why don't we wrap up? I'm not sure if we have any real final thoughts. We've kind of wrapped
sort
it up here,
of
I
do.
Guess. Okay, what are your final thoughts,
My Char? Final thought is I think this episode has very good intentions, as we've been talking about, and they could have taken it so much further than they did. And I feel like the ways that they tried to show their point was so superficial that it was doomed to fail. Because, okay, the women are tall. The women have big shoulder pads to show how much bigger they are than the men. And the men are lowly and they're just kind of sulked in with, you know, their shoulders and they're short. And so what? I didn't see a whole lot else that said, okay, these women are dominant in the society. This is, and there's no real reflection of, okay, yeah, men in our world are like this, and we're trying to show how this is a problem, or we're trying to show how on the Enterprise everything is equal. No, Riker gets to sleep with the chick while the girls do all the work. That's not equal either. What the hell?
Yeah,
absolutely. No, not working for me. So I just felt like it was well-intentioned, but very superficial. That's my final thought.
Yeah. And there's weird moments in it. Like, they say to check the Angel One computer system, and Brianna says, you know, oh, it's too complicated for a man.
Yeah.
And Data says, I was like, well, I may be anatomically a man, but I'm an android, so it's fine. It's like, what are you saying with that?
It means, like, I have a penis, but I'm a robot. Therefore, I can understand a computer.
Right. It's like, seriously, computers are fine. Like,
the statement you need to make there is, no, any idiot can operate a computer. Why are you being a sexist?
Yeah. I don't know.
But instead, they just make a joke about, and there's little jokes here and there with Data, too. Like, Data doesn't know what perfume is. And then you've got Trent sort of spraying himself with the perfume.
Yeah.
It's an episode that just doesn't know what it's doing. It never gets a cohesive message, and it never gets it across. And yeah, I think it's because it's all men on the writing staff, and it's because it's still the 80s. They know what they want to say, but they don't really know how they want to say it. Not yet. I think today they could do this episode, and I think they could handle it.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know if it was possible in the 80s with these writing
staff.
Yeah,
but I also don't think it's as necessary as... Because, I mean, as we talked about, it's 80s.
Right.
80 cents. The way to approach this episode at the time it was made is the glass ceiling. But at this point, we have had female presidential candidates, vice presidential candidates. We have a female secretary of state at the moment. You know, where we are further along. It always goes slower as a society than we think it will. And that's a great idea to explore for a Star Trek episode. The fact that it just takes longer.
I was just going to say that, too. Is if you did this in 2012, how would you do it? I think you would show maybe where there is still a lack of progress.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the way I think you would have to do it now, because the year of 2012 is so much different, and really not. It is better. It may be not as better as we would like it to be. It may not be completely equal, and we think it should be, and that's totally valid. But it is better, and we are further along than we were in 1988. Yeah. So it's. You would have to approach it differently. You would have to, I mean, I'm not even sure what you would do other than approach it from the angle of, yeah, it just takes longer than you think it does. Because at this point, the idea of a female president is not shocking or absurd at all. It's not outlandish in the least for us now. And, you know, it's my personal opinion that in 4 years that Hillary Clinton will probably run and at least be the nominee, if not the president. So it's like, it's just not outlandish to us anymore. So you'd have to figure out how to attack that same idea, making a comment on how society exists for us now, as opposed to the way it existed in 88.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
So, I mean, for myself, my final thoughts, I mean, are basically like, the episode swung. It was they attempted the swing. They really did. But it was a miss. So, I mean, it's a swing and a miss at the very least, because there are episodes where they don't even swing. So we should give this episode at least credit for swinging.
That's true.
Okay, that's true. Yeah.
It's a definite strike on their part.
I'll give it at least a warp factor 1.7 for that.
All right.
Okay. Well, yeah, my final thoughts on it are pretty much what you guys said. I think that they had a message they wanted to explore, but they were caught out of time. They were exploring an issue that had already passed at the time. I think it was the old mindset still behind Star Trek that you see early in TNG. Mm-hmm. And the message they wanted to explore, they did very, very poorly as well. So the episode, it actually comes off to me as comical. And in fact, after we watched it, my wife said that was unexpectedly funny.
Right.
And that was her take on the episode. And
I agree.
So that's it. So I think the best I can do is I'm going to give it 3 chest hairs.
I think that's about the number that I have.
Which is not many, considering.
More or less.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. Well, compared to Riker's
exactly.
3 million.
Right. I don't Well, compared to Trent, you've got you're a manly man. So
compared to Riker, you're nothing.
But maybe I want to be in Trent's position. I mean, some people have different expectations for different relationships.
This is
true.
They're
all totally valid. There are people who have different ratios, I guess, of power in a relationship. Sometimes it's equal, sometimes it's not, and some people are okay with that. That's what they want.
Yeah.
The ultimate point is find somebody that you can share that wants the same thing as you. Whatever that thing is, regardless of how weird or perverted or off the wall it seems to us, if that's what you want and you can find a consenting adult that wants the same thing, God bless. That's that's the ultimate point. It's like, as long as people are on the same page and you're not coercing anybody, something out of anybody. Anyway, there's my truth, yeah. Justice in the American Way speech.
But, yeah. Anyway. I just want to know, were the men on this planet happy? Even if they weren't, what were they doing to change it? And that's what I wanted to see from it. And I don't feel like we ever really got a detailed enough breakdown of the Angel One Society to know one way or the other.
No.
Like, if Trent was happy in his position and he wasn't doing anything to change it, what's the big deal?
Right.
So. Yeah. The thing is, like, I'm sure, to continue the analogy from before, I'm sure there are women in very conservative Muslim relationships that wear the burqa and the hijab and all of that who are totally fine and enjoy that lifestyle, and for lack of a better term. And they have perfectly happy lives. I'm sure there are some out there. I don't know any personally, but I don't know a lot of Muslims in it. But anyway, I'm sure they exist as much as the women who are horribly, horribly abused that we don't know about exist in those same relationships. My thing is, if you want to not be in the situation that you are in, you have the opportunity to leave.
Yep.
So if you're in that situation, the wrongness is not the relationship, is not people living that way, that lifestyle, whatever that lifestyle is. The wrongness is not being able to leave it if you so choose and go do something else. Mm. There's nothing evil about the Amish, because if you don't want to be Amish, you can leave.
Right.
That's the ultimate point. So, yeah, the problem with Angel One is that we never saw anybody from the society who wanted to leave the society, any of the male. We only saw Trent, and Trent was perfectly happy, which itself is valid. If Trent is happy in that society, cool, right. Fine. But show us somebody else who's like, no, I'm not happy, and I want to go. And it's just, they tried to do it in the sense of, they tried to show the freighter crew, Ramsay. By the way, what a bad name for this episode. We're going back to the whole, like, default chauvinism. You're actually going to name the guy Ramsay. right. Okay. But anyway, so the person that we show to have that point of view is essentially an American who doesn't actually belong there, who was there by misfortune.
Yeah.
And is stupid in the fact that he doesn't want to leave, even though he doesn't really belong there, even though it means his own death or whatever. It's like, no, it needs to be somebody within that society. It needs to be somebody like Trent. And so, again, it's a swing, but it's a mess.
Well, let's just remember that whatever this episode failed to bring us in social commentary, without this episode, we would have never had the great Star Trek collectible, the Riker Chia Chest.
That's right.
I'm going to say I could do without that one. That's one collectible I have neglected to put on my shelf.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. We should wrap up the discussion. So, Brian, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter under my name as my handle, Brian Finifter, BrianFinifter. And I'm also a co-host on a podcast called Down in Front, where we talk about movies. We record podcasts where we talk about movies and the business. I myself and my three co-hosts, we all work in the industry in various ways. And we also occasionally, but in the past regularly, record our own commentaries to movies. So we'll sit down, much like Riff Tracks or something. We'll watch a movie and we'll have a conversation with it. So you sync it up and you watch the movie, but with our conversation. So you can find us on Twitter at Down in Front, or on our website, downinfront.net. You can find all of our episodes in a great form and everything there. And if you like movies, I encourage you to check it out.
Excellent. Excellent. And Char, tell everyone where they can find you.
All right. Well, you can find me, of course, all over the place on Trek FM. And you can find me on the Twitters at OhTheProfanity.
All right. Great. Yeah. So everyone check out Down in Front. Check out Char's work on Trek FM. And I guess that's our show.
Okay, bye.
Okay, Grace. Now, I really, really dislike Angel One. And I feel kind of bad about that because I don't like disliking Star Trek. Like, I love Star Trek. I think that's one of the things on our show. We do. We really, really like Star Trek. It's just, sometimes there's an episode that's just not good. And we have to explain in excruciating detail sometimes why we don't like the episode so much.
Right. sometimes in perhaps too much detail, what's known as what's known as TMI on Twitter, right? Too much information.
Yes.
But no, I agree. It's look, the point of the show, the point of the Ready Room is we love Star Trek. We want to discuss Star Trek. We wouldn't really be doing TNG justice if we simply said, oh, Angel One, yeah, that was a great episode. I love that whole snowball thing. That was so cute. And when Picard couldn't engage out because he lost his voice, it was just so funny. You know,
right? I mean, Worf sneezes. That's the thing. Like,
yeah, that's great. So.
We didn't even. Oh man, we didn't even cover Worf sneezes. I love that reverb effect.
Well, I have to tell
you, on his sneeze,
that was a ripoff. Actually, that was a ripoff of the Alf episode where he got the Melmacian hiccups.
Was it?
And he ruined Kate's mother's wedding. Yes, that's exactly what it was.
So. I'm only a couple episodes into my rewatch of Alf, so. I don't remember that episode quite so lucidly as you do.
You got to pick it up. No, we watch Alf all the time around here. All right. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good. I think we had a good discussion about Angel One. It's true, you know. They wanted to make a point about something and they completely fell on their faces trying to do it. And so
right.
That's what we have to say. But anyway, let's tell the listeners where to find us. If you want to share your thoughts on Angel One, do you think they did a good job? Do you think they failed to get across their point? Let us know. Just go to trek.fm/contact. You'll find the form there. You can send us a message. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, on G+ at hyperchannel/trekfmgplus. And of course, you can find us on Twitter under username trekfm, where Greg, Char, Drew, and myself are always tweeting about Star Trek, so just chat us up. And Greg, I believe everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
Yes, you can find me at Twitter at Greg Harbin, that's GREG, HARB as in boy, IN. So basically, if while I'm recording the Ready Room, I do drink an entire bottle of wine, you'll know that before you actually listen to the show,
that's
so you
right.
can be prepared.
People will know. You'll also know that we decided right now to leave the pomp in the show.
Yes.
All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's a Brian with a Y. You can get a mix of Star Trek, college football, random song lyrics, and anything else, Japan, anything else that pops into my head. And also, while you're around on the internets, drop by the website, trek.fm, or iTunes, or Stitcher. Find all of our shows, my interview show, Matterstream, Hyperchannel with international sex symbol, Tristan Riddell, Decade for USTO players with Colin and Tom. We've got Trek News and Views with Colin, all kinds of stuff going on all the time. Go read Char's feature articles on the website, and Drew's as well. And catch us there. Well, Greg, it's another show. I'm going to head off and see if I can decipher that library computer. I may only be a man, but somehow I think I can extract some information from it.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to stick some chest hair in it, because the Ready Room is done.
Let him be a little stupid.
Let him think that he is Cupid. You can make him be a man or Mickey Mouse. It's so nice to have a man.
A man, a gal.
Around my house.